Access number 31425, Mr. Mick Gagan, Real 6. Now, we're talking about your time at Worley Barracks and basic training. Now, you've mentioned a couple of times, let's go on for it now. What were the lads like that you were training with? I mean, where did they come from? How did you get on with them?
Well, nearly all of them were excellent mates. I think that you all went in there, you've all got the same things, but there was one fella, he did his training as a solicitor, and he'd got exempt from call-up before because he was doing his, basically he'd come from university and doing his solicitor training. So that taken 3 years, so he was older than all of us. And he didn't like the army much, but he's got to do it. And he used to stand there laying down the law and everything like that, everything. And one day he's gone in, and in the ablutions, all you had was a wash base and you didn't have no baths or nothing like that. It was just normal, and the urinals. And they were just a trough in the ground. And one morning, and he never used to swear, but this morning he swore more than anybody, because as he walked in, he had his shaving gear and his flannel in his hands and his towel, and he tripped and he dropped them all down in the urinal. And the language would come out, and this was, you know, and everyone, we rolled up. And also we had another man, he worked on the cockle boats at Leon Sea in Essex, and he wanted to go into the Navy, and his name was Trevor Harvey, and his relations had the cockle sheds in there, so he'd always worked on boats, but they put him in the Army, and he didn't want to come into the Army. He'd done all his training, he was a really nice chap, but he wanted to go into the Navy. And he got on with the art, he'd done all his training, everything like that. But he still kept on about he should have been in the Navy. But many years later, I met him, and his training, why I think they'd put him in there, they'd put him into the Army, and he finished up in charge of a boat in Israel, taking troops ashore. They put him in the, I think it was a service corps, and they put him in charge of a boat. So he got, that was, and I think that this is what they had in mind at the very beginning for him, for training. So it turned out well, you know.
And did you make a lot of friends? I mean, was it a good group?
Oh, it was a great group, and I used to go boxing training of an evening, you know, whenever I could and everything like that. And for the PTIs and physical training instructors. And I think that it was a good team spirit, you know. And
now, tell me about the instructors. What were they like?
The instructors was very good. Most of them, you found a lot of them were World War II men, and they understood men. And they knew how to treat people and things like this. If you stepped out of line, then you'd be really in for it. And we had a sergeant, and he said, I can be very nice. He said, and I'll get on with all of you. He said, off parade, we're off parade. He said, on parade, we're on parade. He said, and it'll be sir and everything like that. He said, off parade is different. He said, and if I find any of you taking me on, he said, then you'll find out what I am like. And everyone respected him, and, you know, they were, and the physical training instructors, they were good. You'd go into the gym, you know, and you got the PTIs and everything, and they'd keep you on your toes and everything, and you couldn't stand still. Even if you stood still, even if you was in one spot, you had to be running on the spot.
And they knew the stuff, all these instructors. That's what,
oh, yeah, they were.
And what about your officers? Did you see much of them, or what were they like?
Yes, we see quite a bit of the officers, and they were really decent people. You know, they understood men as well. You may get the odd one or two which could be that little bit awkward, other than that, I don't think I had any complaints.
Now tell me about this boxing training.
Well, you could go to a gym any night, some people, you know, and I used to go because I was the, I've been boxing for many, very many years. So I used to go there because I liked it. Even if you're not in the boxing training, you didn't have to be in the ring fighting or anything like that. You'd have your punch bags and your weight lifting gear and everything like this. And you'd have your speed balls and everything like this. And you spend an hour or that in there every night, and it used to be really good.
Did you box at the time? Were there actually competitions
yes,
while you were there?
Yes, there was competitions. It was 6 weeks training, and you may have about six squads come in, and everyone had to do boxing training, whether you liked it or not. You all had to go in the ring. If you got beat up, that was your luck, hard luck. If someone's hit you, and they did this to give you confidence and also to give you that bit of spirit in if you're a soldier. And we had a boxing competition, and I was welterweight boxing at that time, and I won the competition for the whole camp at my weight, and they gave me the prize. I won two prizes, but they were both cigarette cases with lighters attached, and I've never smoked in my life, so I brought them home for my father, and he took one to work and raffled it and got a few bob for me, and then he kept the other one, which I still have to this day.
Now, what about the competitive approach between squads? I think you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, it was very competitive, because one squad would be better than the other one, and also you got the best barrack room competition, and the officers would go round and have a look at all your rooms and everything, your barracks, and it may be, you know, and you've won the best barrack room competition, and it was more or less a competition between all the squads. And even in the final day of the training, there was a big square and a band and everything, and all the squads had to do their marching to see how they progressed in that 6 weeks. And the colonel, you may have the brigadier there.
I'll come back to the passing out parade there, but
but you know, it was all everything there was. It was more or less a competition between one squad and another.
And that did motivate you. It wasn't just the sergeants that
no,
were motivating
no,
you.
No, you were going to get better than that squad.
So it worked.
Which really worked, yeah.
Now, what about when you going out? Where would you... Blandford it was, wasn't it?
Brentwood.
Brentwood, Brentwood. What would you do when you went out to Brentwood, when you were allowed out? I know you weren't allowed.
What you'd do, you know, we used to go up and just walk around the town, because you didn't have no money to go. And you might have enough money to go in and have a cup of tea and a cake or something like that in a cafe. But mostly you'd go around and there'd be a couple of amusement places with amusement machines in. And you'd find some people going there, or else you'd see them going in just to have the odd pint in a pub or something like that. And
which did you do?
We used to walk up into the town and walk around to see the lot of the buildings and everything like that. You know, just walking around to pass the time away. There was not much, and there wasn't much transport in them days and things like that.
Now, how long were you with them then?
I was with the Essex Regiment for 6 weeks.
And what about the passing out parade? Tell me about that.
Well, the passing out parade, that was, it had to be seen to be believed, because after 6 weeks training, some of those fellas were really smart, who had never had a uniform, boots or anything on before. And when you got on that parade, the colonel would be there, perhaps the officer commanding the district would be there, brigadier, and everyone was shouting, like, and the sergeant major, the RSM, and it's surprising you'd have one squad, you've got to go up, your squad to go up in March, and it's surprising in 6 weeks, and how those fellas, it's been instilled into them what they learnt in that 6 weeks. They were really smart. You got the odd one or two which didn't make it, which we had one in our squad, he didn't make it, but on the whole, they were really disciplined and everything, and the competition wise, and happened to be that the sergeant major we had, he was leaving the army. He'd been in the army 20 odd years, and he was leaving the army at that week. And our squad won the competition. And we'd all clubbed round because he was leaving. He was a decent bloke. And we bought him a cigarette case and something else, a watch, which was, you know, not a dear one. But we presented it to him after the parade when our officer was there. And he did really appreciate it. He was choked, you know. But this was the spirit in those days, you know.
Now, I forgot, you also mentioned you had some sort of, you weren't promoted, but you were, what were you?
Well, I was, like they used to say, you're like the leading soldier in the room, you know. You make sure that everyone's getting this done and that done and things like that. And I happened to be the youngest as well, because I'd volunteered, but all the others were conscripts. So I was the youngest one in the squad.
Did the fact that they were conscripts and you not, a volunteer, did it make any difference to anybody?
No. You were all in the same boat. You were all recruits. You've all got in there. No one's got more than the other person. And that was it.
So you didn't look down on them and they didn't sneer at you back?
Oh, no. We were all mates, all muckers, you know. So, no, it was a really great team spirit.
So you'd be there, what, till back end of February, I presume, 6 weeks from
till the, yeah, till the beginning of March.
So what happened
47.
Next?
47.
What happened next?
Well, there was one thing, because you all got to go, and if you was a conscript, they could send you where they wanted to. But I was I'd put down for a regular, and I wanted to go into the Royal Artillery, which my father and grandfather had been in before. So I was down there, and if they didn't put me in the artillery, I could have come out of the army and waited till I was called up. But I put down for that. But there was many people went to different places which they didn't want to go. And one was this, who I've already mentioned, Trevor. But we also had another fella, he didn't like the army, he hated the army. He wouldn't do much, he'd done a lot of time inside, in Jankers, in the guard room and everything. And he used to go sick every morning, bad feet, sore throat, bad back, everything. And when we all had to go into a room, and then the officer is, you know, you went up to be interviewed, got there might maybe 20 of us in a room, and he said to me, you're going to the Royal Artillery, he said, you're going to up into Durham to do your training with the Royal Artillery, and you're going as a signaller, you know, which was good. But this fellow, he went up two times after me, and the officer said to him, he said, I see you've been sick every morning, practically, since you've been here. He said, yeah, I shouldn't be in the army. He said, but physically, he said, you're fit. He said, no, I'm not, and he was saying all this. So the officer, and everyone burst out laughing. He said, well, as you reckon you're unfit, he said, and you've been sick every morning, he said, to save a lot of time, he said, we're putting you in the Army Medical Corps. He said, so that you'll be in the hospital. He said, you'll be cleaning out bedpans, everything like that. He said, but then you can go sick all of your own time, whenever you want to. And the fella nearly collapsed. We've nearly collapsed. We're laughing, a whole lot of us. And it was different things like this, you know. And but you all had to go and do your core training. And this is when the basic training. So, and a lot of people, after they've done their basic training, maybe wouldn't go on parades again, you know, like different regiments, what you went in.
Yeah, so tell me where you went then. You went to Durham, okay? Who did you join up there? Which training regiment?
I went to the 38th Training Regiment, Royal Artillery, and that was in Deerbolt Camp, County Durham.
Where's that?
North of England, right up in the north.
No, I mean Deerbolt.
Deerbolt Camp. That is, that was by, it was up by Barnard Castle.
I know where that is, yeah.
And it was out in the country a bit, and you had to cross a river in the back way to get in, if you wanted to get in the back way. You had to cross, but normally you went round over the old bridge, because it's an old medieval town, and then you'd go into Deerbolt Camp from that way.
You were being trained as a signaller there.
That's correct, yeah.
Now, what was your reception like when you got there, you know, because this is your Royal Artillery, different...
Yeah, it was, we was going into, and the RSM, I think there was about eight of us, not all from, I was the only one from my camp, but different times during that day, and we caught the train from Richmond. Just can't think of the name. And we caught the train there, and then we went to the railway station in Barnard Castle, and there was a person to meet me, and a few of them got off the train, from Darlington. We'd got the train from Darlington, and we got to there, and then there was a fella with an open truck to meet us, and it was winter time, but he had this open truck, and we all had about eight of us, we put our gear onto there, and I only met one fella on the train going there, but the others was in different carriages, and they were the old carriages, where you couldn't walk through a train or anything like that, just single carriage, and we got there, and we all had to get off at the guard room, and then the provost sergeant come out, welcomed us, told us what we got to do in the camp, and if we didn't do what conform with the regulations, we'd be back with him again. This was the provost sergeant. He was a decent bloke, and then we were sent to different barrack rooms here and there, and when we got in there...
Now, were you put in a battery at the start?
No. We wasn't in batteries then, because you were still training, and it was a training camp for signals. So you put in a room, I suppose there must have been about 16 people in the room.
Just a hut?
Yeah, in a hut.
What was it like?
The hut, it had a little round stove... in the corner. It was about 3 foot high and about 18 inches wide, and it was in this hut, and that had to warm the whole hut up, and you only got coal twice a week because they hadn't got coal. The place up there was covered in snow, everything there, and even some of the beds wasn't right. You had to mend the legs of the bed, because this is how it was, and they give you blankets. You didn't have sheets or nothing those days, you had blankets, three biscuits to lay on, and you didn't have a mattress, you had like three biscuits, so the one at the bottom, if you moved your feet, you'd find that it'd be on the floor by the morning, and your feet out, and you've got frozen feet, and they had a shower, a bathroom there, but you wasn't allowed to go in there because of the fuel shortage and everything like this. All they'd do is that they'd have it going once a week, and you had to go and have a bath once a week, and you had to sign the book, and there'd be an NCO there to check it to see that you did so, and then in that bath you wouldn't get much water. They'd run the bath for you, and you'd get in, and that would be the amount. It was just that one little shower bathroom place, I can see it now, a small building, and only like a little hut with that in, and I think there was about four baths in it, so you didn't get much water by the time it was hotted up and come in, and you had to go at different times, you'd be assigned a different time, and there may be eight huts around you, so every day someone's got to go in, and you may get a bath once a week, which had to be signed for. You wasn't allowed to go in there to get hot water to shave, so you may have lots of you'd have put an old bucket or something on the stove in the room that'd get hot, and you all have a cup full or something just to shave with, you know. And if you was lucky, there may be a cup over, so you can make a cup of tea after, you know. But you all had to shave, and you used to shave at night, so you wouldn't have all the rush in the morning, because you couldn't. If you shaved in the morning, it'd be shaving with cold water. You had no hot water. So it was pretty basic, but at the same time, no one complained because of how it was in those days.
So how did your training start there?
Well, the training started, first of all, you've got a squad, and you're marching here, you're marching there. And there'd be all different kinds of rooms, because some would have radios in, some would have telephones in, some would have cables, what you have to learn, everything like this, like what you had to learn, basic. And then you'd have, in the room where you went, you'd have a 38 set, 21, 22.
Well, let's do them one by one. Tell us about the wireless training first.
Well, the wireless training, you had to go in and they'd show you everything about the wireless. So you'd have this big set in front of you, and the very first thing they'd show you, everything worked off of a battery. So they'd show you all the sorts of supplies into the compartment at the side of the set where the all the relays came into to distribute the power into the set. Then you got to learn all the front of the set, which was really there could be about eight dials, and two dials work with one another, and you had to do this, and it was a bit, never having anything like this, it was complicated.
Which set was it, do you know?
There was a 21 set and a 22 set, and they were mostly used in field, because I was in the field artillery, and...
So, what about tuning in? Did you find that difficult?
It's all according where it was, because you had copper aerials about 6 foot high, which went into a little holder, and you've got a pigtail coming there, going into the set. And sometimes you may even have a little bit of grease or dirt in the bottom of that aerial. You wasn't making full contact. And then you'd get someone, they'd go out in a truck, say, half a mile away, and you've got to get in contact with them. And this is where the instructors would do it on purpose, put something in so you're not getting... full volume, and then they'd show you where you're going wrong, and you've got to look at this sometimes, you know. And also, if you was near a pylon, an electricity pylon, you've got a lot of induction, things like this, and they're showing you all the fault finding methods and everything, and they'd do it on purpose, put something and you've got to find it, and you wouldn't know that they've done it, and things like this. And then
you know how to repair? Or, I mean, were you learning what was going on inside the set, or were you just learning how to use it?
Well, we were learning how to use it, but also if something went wrong, you knew what valve to go to, because they were valves in those days.
So did they train you how it worked?
Yeah, they tried to teach you how it worked, all the circuits inside and everything like this. And this was a 4-month course, so it was a pretty strict course. And in the evening, you was in this camp, the only place you could go would be the Naffy to have a tea or something like that. You wasn't...
Hang on, back to wireless.
But this is what I'm saying, because this is why we wouldn't go out, and they may give you a wireless to take into your barrack room to do overnight, and to... you'd say, well, you can take one in and you can play about with it, and which was a very big help, because sometimes, and you'd have a corporal in the room or bombardier, and you know, and he'd be an instructor as well, and if something went wrong, you'd ask him what, and he'd show you, and nearly every night you'd find everyone round the table was doing, looking at the set or anything like that.
Now what about erecting aerials, because that must be part of the job as well, or was that not?
Well, it was part of the job, but what you mostly have to do with, you had a 50-foot aerial, which was a wire, and it had to be strung from one area to another. And the basic training was that, is to say you've got it up in the air, and you've got about a 10-foot wire coming down to go onto your set. And you had to make sure that there was nothing in the way to block it. And you'd also try and get right angles to the set where you are, so that you've got a good reception. And many times you could put something up. You've got your insulation blocks on the ends to stop it any going through to earth or anything like that. And but you had to be so careful fixing your reception wire down to your set to that as well, because that could cause a lot of trouble as well. And it was good training. And you've even, if you've got a tree and you haven't, it's more than 50 foot apart, then you've got to get a rope and tie the aerial to it and pull it up so that you've still got it up in the air. And it gives you it would give you a sense of achievement if you could do these things, you know.
Now, what? So that's anything else? So that's the wireless aerial, the wireless itself. Now, what about voice procedure? well, Morse. Did you learn Morse?
Yes, I was just going to say I had a clear voice then, and I could speak, and they could understand it, you know. But a lot of people, they'd say, right, you've got to get this out of your voice, you know, they'd be a little bit gruff, something like this, and you could hear them if they was away or if they were slow speaking. And we did that, and also then we had to learn Morse. Everyone had to learn the Morse code, and we did all that.
Hang on, let's do the rest of the voice procedure first before we come to the Morse. What about, I mean, were you learning the sort of Roger, and I'm not sure what that is, but things?
You had to learn all that, and it was, in those days, it was Abel Baker, Charlie Dog, Easy Fox,
now that's
George Howe. Yeah, and you had to learn all these, and not only that, you had to learn different call signs, because if you was in action or anything like this, and also we were doing gun signalling, so that if you're in a battery and you're like the forward observer or in the gun position, you've got to learn all the different things like Wilco, that is will comply, you know, and Roger, out, everything like this. You had to learn all these call signs, and you had to write all them in the book, and you'd find fellas sitting there for hours trying to look up and see what they are, you know. And being in the artillery, you had to learn basic training before you ever went to a battery. You had to learn all the signals and where the gun positions were and where you were.
I'll come back to them because they're more artillery, right?
Yeah, but this was all the training in the signals, which you had to learn at different places, and all the call signs, the complete lot. And also Morse, we were learning Morse.